Hi, this is Colleen from Pets on Cue. This week we have Chrissy Joy. She is the National Trick Dog Champion from 2018. She also has had her dogs on movies, commercials, TV shows, and she tours all over the country with her trick dogs. Chrissy, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. I've got these two boys, which is Darby and Whidbey. These are the two youngest champion trick dogs titled in the world. Believe it or not, they're brothers a year apart, same parents, and they are in full wrestle mode.
The late night yayas, I call them.
Yes, like the best and worst thing in the world to buy this 8-foot beanbag because they have claimed it as their own.
So how did you get into this whole world of dog training, set training, trick training?
So, you know, that's a great question because it's not something that's like clear cut for everybody. Like some people have a great dog and they're this discovered along the way, et cetera, for a job that came up. So for me, you know, I had been dreaming about working dogs on set since the day of like, oh gosh, I must have been like 8 or 9 years old watching Black Beauty, The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit, Black Stallion, and all these like horse movies. So I was really into horses first. And then what happened is that I would work in my like closet as a kid and I would reenact whole scenes that would like have animals on set. And I would try to like reenact them myself with animals. So does anybody remember Wishbone? Like, do you remember the show Wishbone?
Yeah.
Like, I was totally a fan. And so what I would do as a kid is I would like have my little stuffed animals and reenact Wishbone with a dream of, how can I possibly work animals on set someday? I just felt that was calling for me.
We've had this conversation before, but we're very, very similar. Black Beauty is one of the reasons that like I got into this whole animal world. I'm obsessed with it, more so on the dog sides, but I've ridden horses for a long time and I'm obsessed. But what sets you apart from everyone else is definitely what I want to get into next. And why you are this amazing trainer and why I'm dying to work with you is because you're the National Trick Dog Champion, done, like amazing. And that you just did a movie with Beasley. What was it called?
Agent Toby Barks. It was a really fun, very much a kid's movie. Like, you've got to be ready. It's a kid's movie. But Beasley did all of the stunts and tricks himself, including things like driving a car, typing on a keyboard, pulling out a USB from the computer and operating a mouse. You know, they have something, as you know, called a puppeteer on set, but they actually like let her go the first day because they were like, oh, he's not going to need it, which actually saved production a lot of money because we were able to do all the tricks ourselves. So there was a lot of value in trick training for set dogs. But yeah, besides that, you know, Beasley is like the movie stunt dog from 2018 to today. And then I've got these two crazy guys staring at me, who are also excellent, excellent trick dogs and have each been in some sort of production, already to this day. So, they're coming up the ranks for sure.
Yeah. So you got into it through acting and kind of fell into it. Do you know we both know how hard this industry is to break into. It's a very small bubble, yet see my top back. It is this very, very teeny, teeny bubble, but is impossible to penetrate. Like the union's impossible to get into. You need to work with a company. I have one of those companies and there are, you know, maybe 10 in Los Angeles, a few on the East Coast that are really reputable, solid companies. And they're almost impossible to get into the industry now. It's almost like you have to take over another company now coming in. What's your training style?
And so, you know, touch on that topic because I think it's really smart to just bring up, and I know this is off a little bit, but this is what we do, Colleen. You and I are so let's just roll. You know, there's a difference between your reputable agency and then places that you're like, oh my gosh, you know, it's so important that the animals are coming from a reputable source of a positive training atmosphere, with the right handlers, with the right people who know how to work animals on set, with the right expectations of those animals. Having like reputable companies is not easy to come by, but they're absolutely worth your time if you can get involved with them. And so for me, I found, you know, both sides of the spectrum. And Colleen, we have absolutely discussed those spectrums. so I think it's important just knowing before you do ever get involved, like just be really aware of what is your training style and what are your expectations out of this work to be able to link with the right people. So that's just my two cents on that. But back to my training style, I think it's really important that we understand about positive reinforcement.
I 100% agree with you. When you have a different type of training, I've hired the wrong people on set, and you always learn from your mistakes, where they brought a cat on set that clearly was abused and I had to fire them because the cat wasn't, what I was promised was something very different, and it was kind of a last minute thing, last minute booking, and I had to like cancel it, and it was a Super Bowl commercial, so that was fun. Yeah. And what we had to do is like completely readjust. And it is so, so, so important that those animals are confident enough to be there that have been non-abused. Because if you have an abused animal on set, when they see that big light, that big camera, that big man that's behind the camera, because you can't control all those things. When you have an animal that's super confident, that's been exposed to those things over time in a gradual positive way, it's a completely different ball game.
So, you know, also it's about the positive reinforcement, but knowing your dog or knowing your animal, like what is their, I'm gassing out, what is their threshold, you know, learning about your dog and learning about their limitations and not over expecting, and staying very true to what you believe they can do and not promising things that you and your mind think they can do, but in reality they can't, or it's too much, or it's too overwhelming. So,
or you just don't know, right? So if I'm saying, you know what, my dog can jump into a pool and swim. Right. My dog cannot do it. He's horrified of the water. Right. So it's not a job I'm going to put my dog up for, because he doesn't know how to swim. Like, he'll run along the ocean in the water perfectly. But you know, there's certain things I feel like under promising over delivering are the perfect thing when you're on set, because then you can do extra for them or tell them exactly what the animal can do. And I love a production company that works with an animal, you know, casting company.
And a lot of people think that it's like, well, I just have to have a pretty dog. Like, oh, my dog's cute. Why can't my dog work? And there's so much more to that than just having a good look, because, you know, your dog's nerves also have to be very stable and steady. Or listen, they might want the Frisbee dog and then it might be perfect, but some dogs, he's giving me such side eye right now. Does anybody see
that? But it looks good, so it's fine.
You're a good boy. But you know, some dogs, you know, you do need to have more of that. I can repeat certain behaviors over and over again without falling apart or diminishing or giving you the same behavior. Like, I feel like, and I know we're jumping the gun a little, but I feel like teaching set cues is legit like teaching a dog how to be a dog on cue.
Yeah. I mean, why do you think that's my company name?
Yeah, I love it. Well, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, right. I mean, and when we're on set too, like if I'm on set and I know the animal can't do something, I have to go there and like explain to them, like with the Savitsky cats that we just had on last week, working with them, or I guess by the time this airs a while ago, but working with them, they're on set, they're trained trick animals. They don't have a distance. They never needed it because the owners are right there. So teaching them how to do that, and then they've worked on that since we've worked with them. So I'm so excited again to be doing stuff. Anywho, what are the most important things that your dog needs to know when on set?
So, and I'm learning still, like there's a lot that I immediately jump to, but there's a lot I'm noticing as I have different dogs. I think the biggest one is the mental stamina to repeat a behavior over and over again.
Yeah.
As well as socialization and exposure and a good traveler. Because if you have a dog that doesn't travel well for a day, then you're going to need to like book extra days for you to just be in the vicinity of the set. So your dog, if you know, dog gets car sick, probably not a good one to be bringing on set, because they could really struggle to get things together to actually work. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, the socialization and exposure is massive. And I know COVID's kind of been an issue with that, but your dog needs to be comfortable. It doesn't need to like love up on people constantly. That's not what I'm saying. Cause you can pick and choose your casting calls when an agency calls. you know, like, okay, my dog's not great with kids. Don't book them for a kid's party. Like, you know, things like that. But your dog needs to be able to walk in a room, not completely freak out that there's 40 people buzzing around with wires and equipment and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not expecting your dog to be like deaf, dumb, and blind and be like, I don't care what's going on. Like, they're obviously going to look at stuff, but you want to have like an enough of a stable dog that they can approach these things in a, like not neophobic way, which is like new things. People are, you know, it's what that means is like, you're afraid of new things. Mm-hmm. And so, you don't want a dog that's going to constantly balk at different and new places. Cause that's where the biz.
Like the socialization part. And you said it perfectly. Like, no, it's not with people. Like, I don't need my dog running up to random people. So my dog is deaf when he's outside and there are people that are baby talking to him. He ignores it because he can't hear right. it, you know? But he grew up like that. He grew up in New York City. So constantly we're walking to different places that are very unique. A lot of people around, a lot of weird wirings, a lot of weird, and he just became accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that scenario has made him perfect because he only lived there for a year, but it made him a perfect set dog because I can take him on a train. I can take him and do kind of these crazy sets and he'll sit on something for a while. But when repeating behaviors, that is so important with set work. And I kind of trained him in that way and for distance. So repeating behaviors at different distances for a, you know, multitude of times. The last movie he did, he had to lay on a guy's lap and put his head down at least 20 times. But it's also knowing, I think, that mental stamina with your pet of when to give your pet a break, you know, and just tell the director like, hey, you're going to get 15 versions of this. And then my dog's going to need a 15-second nap, or he's going to need not a 15-second nap, but he's going to need like to be in his space for a second, or he needs to get his yayas out, or he needs to get, you need to know your dog or your animal and when they need a break, because that's how the directors are going to get their best performance out of it. And if you work with the producers, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I think that you're so right as far as taking one step back on that conversation is, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I'd love to get involved. How can I get involved? Because we do these showbiz workshops nationwide, which is, we are not an agency. We don't act like an agency, but what we're just trying to do is like teach the public, hey, these are the agencies out there, depending on where you live. And these are the things you should be teaching your dog so that you can be at least a formidable talent when they're asking for you or, you know, looking for a certain dog, whatever. You know, King Charles Spaniel is a rare enough, and I say rare lightly, enough breed, but like seeking one for on set, you may have a cute one, but if that dog is like crazy or knows absolutely nothing, you're not going to get the job.
Or yeah.
If you get the job, it's going to be like a print shoot where the dog just has to like stand there.
Or the dog needs to go into training for 2 months.
And exactly.
And then that's like really hard on that trainer to get all of those behaviors in 2 months. So it's a lot of like just figuring it out and building that dog's confidence enough to be able to work on set. You could have the cutest dog in the world, which a lot of my clients are the cutest animals in the world through social media. Like they have millions of followers, but I can't put them on set because
I will say, like, we'll do workshops and we see like 40 dogs in a workshop and they all follow up like, that's so exciting. You know, I'd love to, we have a training group of lots of different dogs so that if an agency approaches us, you know, if my dogs don't fit, I know Joe Schmo from Michigan would be great. You know, so we connect people that way. It's really fun. And I love doing that. I think that's like my purpose is to spread the knowledge and the fun of all this, but they'll follow up and be like, hey, I want to be a part of your group. Or like, how can I get involved with the agent? And I say, you know, before you jump the gun, I want you to send a video of your dog in a new environment. I want like with distractions in the background. And I want you to show like an off leash, just drop the lead, 6 to 8 foot distance, working your dog in obedience behaviors. And so he has changed position completely. And you know, a lot of times they write back and say, "Ooh, you know, I don't think I'm ready for that," which is such a clear moment of distinction of people thinking their dog is ready. But then you say, I want to see a video of X, Y, and Z, because I think that's at least what the agency is going to be looking for. And I would never want to recommend someone to any agency and then have that dog go on set and be like, a mess.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they back off because they say, oh, my dog can't do that. My dog can do it in the kitchen. sure, I don't want a video in the kitchen. I want it like out in a park or at Lowe's or Home Depot or something like that. Wear your mask, but
with a squirrel in the background with all these things going on. I mean, I think that like we're casting right now for a trick cat thing and talking to each of the owners. I'm like, can you take your cat into Petco in a carrier and it doesn't freak out? And if you can't do that, you can't do this.
Yeah.
Like if your cat's freaking out, you're done. Even the cats that freak out at that, then they go to the next level. Then they go to the next level. We just make sure that the animal's well socialized enough. Cause we didn't really get into this, but what are the different tricks to teach your dog? So let's say when someone's starting off as a set dog, dogs specifically, so beginner, intermediate, and advanced for set work. So I have like my mental list. What's your mental list?
Oh, okay. Well, I would love to know yours. So if you're getting started, I just really strongly believe immediately teaching your dog a mark or go to place. So go to place at some location, whether that for puppies be like on a little pedestal, so it's really obvious. And then the advanced version of that is like breaking it down all the way to a piece of tape on the floor. And then if what we break it down to is going to a penny. So, and I say that lightly, like tape the penny down first, cause I don't want anyone calling me and be like, my dog ate a penny. but you know, what we're saying is like, make it so it's something that can phase out of the room, but the dog can still go to the mark. So eventually what we do is we work our advanced dogs to, what we call is spatially recognize where the marker was. And so we eventually take the penny away on the floor and the dog is taught to go to that vicinity and mark in that vicinity. So they learn like a peripheral of, we call this like a reward marker system, like enough of that pattern. So that like, if I told you to sit in a chair 5 times in a room, then I took the chair away and I said, go sit where you last sat. You have enough know-how of where that chair was to go sit in the location. And that's kind of what we do as well, because you can't always have like tape or a marker on set, but it does help if your dog can go to that vicinity and sit. And it's actually something that production doesn't expect from you, but if you can offer it, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So
going to a mark or a place. Then another thing that I love, of course, besides the obvious, which is socialization and, you know, exposure and all those like mental stabilization and environmental stabilization exercises, is basic obedience. And not just with you, because I made that mistake with Beasley, is get someone else to take your dog and work your dog for you. Whether it be a trainer or a friend, but get that dog used to walking away from you and working for someone else just as eagerly as they like to work for you, because mommy syndrome or daddy syndrome is such a detrimental factor on set. If your dog cannot work away from you, or you walk away and your dog is like freaking out, like so separation anxiety, start now, get your dog comfortable with everyone. That's just so useful. Like, what if you get the flu? Or what if they have to go work for an actor and the dog has to turn their back to you and the dog can't because he's, you know, he or she can't get their eyes off of you. These are things that are going to really hold you back. So basic obedience is huge. Like if you could just have a sit, stand is pretty cool to get down and stays from a 6 to 8 foot, if not more distance. That should fairly get you to be in a good running order for like when you have casting calls coming in, Colleen.
Yeah.
Like that's great for your novice dogs to know. But then when you get to more advanced, obviously it changes.
Yeah. And I think it depends on the type of animal too that you have in there. But with dogs specifically, everything is like basic obedience. I don't need the paw. I have so many people that will tell me my dog can sit and give paw. When have you ever seen that on TV? Like you
rarely
see it on TV because it doesn't exist. Like, so the distance behaviors of basic dog behavior and basic obedience, I think, is the most important thing. Like I would say, you know, what you said, a heel, a sit, marks down, stand at a distance, 6 to 8 feet. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Beginner stage. And then when you get to intermediate, it's like head down. So the dog puts their head down. Eric, you'll put a clip of Charlie doing that. And you know, all the way to going to pull things, open things, you know, and then it goes up to like the advanced stage, which are very advanced trainers that we like to work with, that I know the dogs can paint with their teeth and they can do backflips and they can do agility, but human agility, like Ninja Warrior agility, and backflips and like all those things. So there's like definitely different stages. Most sets are looking for stage one. we also have a temperament test too. So if we need something unique, a unique look, or we usually will go, or if we really want to hire a shelter animal for something really basic for training that we know we can get a dog to do, you know, X, Y, and Z within a week or two, then we also have that temperament training as well that kind of brings you just before level one for like very specific scenarios, like an influencer animal or something like that. But that's kind of how I separate it out. And obviously in more detail than that you and I can get into outside of a podcast, but,
And I think that some of those like advanced things is where you can have more fun and definitely get that trick training involved. But like, you should really have that basic obedience down, indoors, outdoors, new places, bring your target mark with you. Like, just getting them comfortable and not always rewarding them like right on top of you, like toss the treat away or something. Because, you know, I see so many people out there that are like, look at my trick dog and it's so cool. But the dog is like right up your butt all the time.
Yeah.
And I kind of get like emotionally drained watching it because I'm like, yeah, that's great. But your dog always has to be on top of you to do anything, which really tells me the dog is only following the food. So I just get exhausted from seeing that. And I think like there's so much more value seeing a dog do something from a distance, which shows them a little bit more independence in their area of work and, you know, their confidence. So, but also specialty tricks are great. Like the fake pee is a fun one, you know, rolling on their back, you know, but remember they really like, it's very rare that you get a dog to be hired for like circus tricks, in my opinion. But I'm not an agency, but just over the couple of years that I have done work, you know, it's very rare that you get like, we want trick dogs. I mean, you get it. But a lot of times it is like, try to capture those natural behaviors your dog gives you on cue. So like chasing their tail or sneezing or itching or, you know, any of those behaviors, like that's advanced, guys. Yeah. That's not some novice stuff.
Yeah, like 10 to 15 times in a row that your dog
exactly
look the same doing it. So they can get different angles, so they can get different options. And that's the difference between production versus, you know, just someone doing it for Instagram. What's the craziest set story or experience you have?
Okay. So, well, I have a couple stories, so bear with me. Beasley had to be in a car on a car chassis. So it's like a trailer, and attached to that was a big moving van with the back open. Inside that was all the camera crew, et cetera, and me. And I had to hang out down the highway with Beasley sitting in the car with his paws on the car. I had to hang out of it, like holding on to the side of the van, hanging out of the van. And people were holding my shirt to like make sure I didn't fall. And I had, you know, if anybody knows what a touch stick is and you don't know what it is, what it is like for dogs, it's usually like 3 feet long with a ball on the end, and you help the dog, you know where to put their nose or their paw. And it just helps like with direction. So I was like, oh my God, I need a giant touch stick. So Beasley knows whether to look left or look right or whatever I needed for his eye line, because they had very specific eye line that they wanted. So here I am. I took a gaffer's pole, which is like this massive pole one of the crew members had, and I tied a tennis ball to the end, which was like a giant touch stick. Now I'm talking like a 15-foot touch stick, guys. And I was hanging out of the van using this stick to help Beasley understand which way to look during this highway scene that he's driving the car. That was one of the craziest, exhilarating, but also for a trainer, one of the most rewarding, because Beasley, you know, was very nervous about going down the highway and sticking his head out the window and all this stuff. And we had him strapped in, obviously, but he really rose above his own nerves as a dog and put his little paws on it and like drove the car and then looked out the window when he had to look out and then looked over to the actor and looked out the window. Like, he was on point. But awesome. I wish I had more footage of that whole experience.
Was there a safety guy on set for this? Because like, I can't do stuff without a safety guy, Humane Society, like we're American.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I think it was one of those instances, and I tend to be that person, which is smart and could get me in trouble as far as like safety wise, is that they're like, man, I don't think we're going to do it. And I'm like, I got this. Like, I'm the one that climbs in the tree so that the dog is digging with the proper eye line at the tree. Like, I'll climb to the top of the tree. So I just said, you know,
just make sure you guys have me, like hold me and I'll do this. Like, this is how you're going to get the shot. And and other people would never be put in that situation. But, you know, I think you also have to gauge yourself as a trainer and who you're working for and say, okay, is this something I'm comfortable kind of pushing the envelope to get the shot, or should we really just scrap it? So it was more than my, it was more about my safety than the dog's safety for that. But I was really confident that if we just followed how I felt it should unravel for the scene, we can get what they need done. And I'm so glad it worked out because it really looks good on camera at the very end.
Aw, I need to watch the whole thing. It's like, it's very kiddie.
It's for kids. So you need to just like have it on in the background or like get your nieces and nephews over, because it's definitely like a cheesy kids movie. But if you watch the first 5 minutes and just count how many tricks just happened or movements for a dog trainer, it can be very enlightening to be like, wow, I never thought about teaching my dog that. You know, things can really build a list for you of just tasks you could work your dog with.
What kinds of animals are right for this job? Like, who's going to book this job? Or just any job?
This is going to sound really bad, but I want the world to hear this, that this is just how the industry tends to go from my point of view, not an agent. Yeah. Like, your dog could be like the next, you know, Einstein, but if he doesn't have the look they want, they'll just look past him.
Yep.
Unless like a super specialty, like we want your dog to like hump a leg and nobody does it except for this one dog, then they might go with that one dog. But it really comes down to look. And I know that sounds so shallow, but it really, you know, with marketing, they have meetings and maybe the color tone matches the bed or matches the product or gives the right feeling, you know, it comes down to that. And so, you know, you may have 5 excellent trick dogs, but certain ones are going to be more appealing to the eye for your clients. As far as, you know, when we hear a lot of dogs getting hired, you have to understand, and this is just my personal opinion, I feel that when the agency reaches out like, hey, we're looking for these dogs, you know, the clients don't really know dogs. So although you know your dog is excellent, they look for like the all-American, or they're a specific breed that I want the Dalmatian. It's in their head. They had a Dalmatian when they were a kid. You know, you never know, but they don't really know dogs very well. So your all-American breeds or your all-American mutts tend to be very popular, or your scruffy dog. They want a scruffy mutt. You know, they just go off of colors and things and styles, but they don't really understand dogs. So any dog can get a job. I really believe that. But like, your black dogs don't show up on camera very well.
No, they're only the villains. So whenever I get like that, that's like the big point that I have. The dogs with white faces, like this one, they're the ones that are booked in this. Like, your dogs have light faces. It shows up on the camera. The dog is bold on the camera. It's easy to capture for the cameraman and the producer. And that's the sad part about it. But no matter what the lighting is, if you have a black dog, it can reflect oddly. So if you have like a black lab or a black pit bull, like, that's why they use chocolate labs and yellow labs. You don't really see black labs on TV. You know, when you're watching it, and unless they need an evil villain dog. So if they need, I mean, we just cast for one that was a pit bull, they needed it with cropped ears. We had one that didn't have cropped ears, and we're not cropping them. So they just need that dark face to be the villain. They need that's why German Shepherds, Doberman, Rottweilers, Belgian Malinois end up being the villain in TV shows because they have darker, longer faces, but the long faces show up.
You have to understand too, as an owner, like, some people will say, like, I don't want my dog to be hired or in a negative light. Like, I don't want my pit bull to be hired in a light against the breed. But you have to also understand, like, that is very typical because that's what like a persona thinks of, like a big, bulky, you know, kind of intimidating look, and it naturally casts that kind of feeling that they may go for. So you have to decide, is this something you're comfortable with? And if you're not, then you need to be upfront to that agent. But other thing is, like, ice blue eyes, like, sometimes they love it, but 2 ice blue eyes, like, they say it looks, I've heard, makes the dog look shocked, you know, all the time on camera. So having 2 blue eyes sometimes can be a very rare thing to be chosen. That's just something I heard from an agent.
And it shows up as red. If they hit the light right, the eye will show up as red. Like, I have that issue with him because he has 1 blue eye. So we won't book something because of it. So it's just something so small. It's like they, oh, your Dalmatian has one too many spots on his face. He looks too much like Pongo.
Yeah. And we've used like dog safe makeup to help like color in. Like our Felix is a super talented pug. We have two super talented pugs, but Felix is getting a little gray. So we have these really safe little, you know, it's like just for men for Felix. And it colors in his little grays if he needs it, but it's like totally dog safe. They actually use an AKC confirmation quite a bit, but you know, it's also about, you know, we had a pit bull work for an agent, a Pennsylvania agent, because Pet Value, which is a really common dog store around here, wanted a pit purposefully to show the audience that they let pit bulls come into their stores and wash. Do they use the doggy wash? Because there's some places that don't accept them. So, you know, it could work for you too. Yeah. But that's a great question. So breed wise, I feel like that's definitely an open book for opportunity, but certain colors, and I know it sounds shallow, but certain colors and certain looks are going to be like easy sells versus others that are going to be like, if you have a very unique breed, like an Afghan, you're really limiting yourself on the jobs you're actually going to get, but you might get a really
booking,
cool job.
You're going to book a Vogue, because actually get more calls for Afghans than I do Golden Retrievers. So like, wow. I don't know what to, I get so many calls for Afghans, which is so weird. I love them, but like, I don't really.
So you could have that specialty dog, but like, if you're like, well, I want to make this my full-time gig and blah, 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 as a dog owner, then you might want to get like a Golden. But then again, if you get a Golden or a Border Collie, you are against the 100.
You're not going to get it. I'm telling you right now, I have people that send me their Goldens all the time and say they're so well-trained. Mm-hmm. I don't get the calls for Goldens because there are a few people that have unbelievably well-trained Goldens. They book the gig every time. Their Golden runs circles around yours, you know?
Yeah. Like, so it's definitely a crapshoot, you know, and people, I always say, get the little scruffy thing, because people love those scruffy things. And, or, just have a really well-rounded dog, a really stable dog with a very generic look, but appealing. And, you know, so the breed wise, that's like an open book, I really feel. And age wise, I think age is just a number. I think if your dog has the look, you can keep going. But I say for skill wise, it goes way back to our first conversation, which is just socialization, exposure. And of course my three favorites, which is distance, duration, and distractions. So working that distance, having duration, being able to repeat the behavior over and over again and hold it, and then working around distractions constantly. So I think though, if you can get those three things on your book for your dog and also explore the world of tricks a little bit, you're definitely going to give yourself a better opportunity. I know COVID's everyone like, well, I can't go outside with COVID. Well, you can just wear a mask, work around it, and keep getting your dogs out there. Because unfortunately, we're seeing an influx of puppies at our dog training facility that have like not had the proper exposure, and then they come in and see you and they like don't know what to do with all of this newness. And I'm like, you guys got to find a way. Like, if you can go to Lowe's and pick up wood for your next house project because you're working from home right now, you can take your dog.
I know, and Lowe's is pet friendly, Marshall's is pet friendly, they're starting to open up. And I mean, wear your mask, be safe, you know, do, wherever you are, because I know that we have people international too, know the rules, be safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many things in there. And I would say that, like, for me, what kind of animal is right for this job, for that being like a producer, like you just need to, I would say, ask an agent or ask someone who knows mm-hmm. that. Cause if you need a dog that can swim, don't get a dog that like a Basenji that hates water, like just mm-hmm. doesn't, it's not going to work. And then for the owners, if they're like, will my dog get the gig? Because it's kind of a, like, I don't know which one it is. If it's the owners, I would say get the dog that best fits your lifestyle and for you. And don't focus on the look, because at the end of the day, I can tell someone like, oh my gosh, your cat or your dog is absolutely amazing and stunning and it should book everything. And then I'll never have an agent or an agent, call me, sorry, casting, a producer, anyone that needs, you know, a Afghan hound at that
right.
time, or a greyhound that is brindle, light brindle, or you just never know. You never know what you're going to get. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I just love talking to you all the time. I would do it every week if I could, every day.
We used to do Friday night wine nights and just like, do something like this.
Do lives and stuff and just talk about training and all of the things. I love love talking about training, but we're going to plug your social media. So be sure to follow you at...
Follow me at The Chrissy Joy. That's on both Facebook and Instagram. And The Good Beasley, which is soon going to be rebranded to The Joy Crew, which I'm excited. So find The Good Beasley. But since there's three of them now, we needed a collective name. So it's going to be The Joy Crew. That should be releasing in the next week or so. That is Facebook and Instagram as well. We are on TikTok because I guess that's the thing now. So we're all over the place, but check us out. We've got a lot of cool things going on. And then again, if you you know, have any questions about training in general, definitely check me out, because we can do Zoom sessions and we can help up your skills. So when Colleen needs a dog, she can come right to you. Mm-hmm.